It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What's up, guys, and welcome back to Midwest Madness, your home for men's and women's Big 12 hoops. I'm Christine Butterfield, and we're just going to be chilling today. It's going to be you and me, and we're going to be talking about the Big 12 draftees today. There's not a lot in this upcoming class from the Big 12. In fact, there's only really two from Kansas and two from Baylor that I will be talking about today. There's other players that, you know, declared for the draft, like Jalen Wilson, who, you know, decided to go back to college. There's other players that declared for the draft and will probably be playing overseas or looking to get in with some practices with NBA teams that ask them, go undrafted, kind of end up like Austin Reeves did from Oklahoma, where he went undrafted. The Lakers went ahead and took him to the summer league. He ended up playing super well, and now he's got an NBA contract. So there are those players out of the Big 12, but ultimately, the few that we're going to focus on today are ones that are very serious draft prospects in this upcoming draft. And that is going to be Jeremy Sochan, Ochai Agbaji, Kendall Brown, and Christian Brown, which is funny because they're spelled completely different ways. But we're going to go back and forth between Baylor and Kansas today. So if you're not a Baylor or Kansas fan, sorry. If you're an NBA fan, welcome. If you just want to know more about where these players are likely to be drafted, or honestly, like my opinions on what the best team fit is for them, stay tuned. Like I said, we're going to start out with Jeremy Sochan. Obviously, like I said before, he's coming from Baylor. And last season, he averaged 8.7 points per game. He's standing at 6'9 and weighs 230. He's 19, which is really, really good age for the NBA. They're looking now, they're trending towards the younger players. You know, the younger, the better at this point. So a player like Sochan that's coming in at age 19 and already showing a lot of promise, I think, is just another plus for him to be drafted. And obviously, his defense is his upside. His on-ball defense is superior. His off-ball defense is great. He has a great basketball IQ as well on the defensive end. And he really just sets the tone defensively. Offensively, he's not as attractive. Offensively, he lacks a little bit of versatility. I mean, he averaged 29.9% from the perimeter last season for Baylor, but he wasn't really asked to shoot a lot of threes. You know, that kind of fell onto other players like Kendall Brown or, you know, Matthew Mayer, just other people like that. But when he goes to the NBA, a player of his size at 6'9 is either going to be playing like possibly a small ball five, more like, I mean, it's annoying because, you know, the NBA is going towards, quote, positionless basketball. You can't really describe a player as like a five or a four or a one anymore. As far as being a small ball five, there are teams where he would fit in there, like Oklahoma City. But there's other teams where he'd actually be a shooting guard, like a, you know, a lengthier shooting guard that would be able to guard the perimeter and use his length that way. So it just depends on where he's drafted on kind of how they'll utilize him in that way. But back to his overall skill set, he has the perfect frame for NBA switching defenses. He has toughness, he's strong, he can handle bigger players inside, and he has the length and mobility to handle quicker players on the perimeter. And, like, just looking back at his film, he hustles so hard, overly communicates, like, you always know what's going on with Jeremy Sochan, and displays excellent court awareness. That's what I love about him. His court awareness is just so beyond his years. And for me, when I'm, you know, looking at these players as they're making their jump to the NBA, there are certain things that you don't want to have to coach anymore. And I think getting players now that are younger to want to play defense is tough. Getting players to want to exert that energy on the defensive end and have that intrinsically come out during the game is really, really hard to get players motivated to do that. I think this past playoffs series is helping kind of further promote the idea that defenses are very serious to the NBA and they should be taken seriously. I mean, literally Boston and Golden State are 1 and 2 in the best defenses in the league, and they're the ones that are in the finals. So I think that it's trending in the right direction. But as far as coaching that, it's so much easier, I believe, to coach shooting mechanics than it is to basically reteach these draftees and rookies how to guard NBA-style players. So that is the huge advantage that Jeremy Sochan has, is his defensive skill set is already NBA caliber ready. He's already knowing where to be. He rotates well. He's a good rim protector. He can be in the pick and roll and hold his own. He can also defend on the perimeter because he's so mobile. And he can defend at the point of attack. Like, there's nowhere that he really gets beat. He's just so disciplined. And a player like that in this draft is kind of hard to find. I'm not saying that he's the perfect, you know, NBA player. I mean, like I said before, I think his shooting and his offensive game definitely needs to improve. But defensively, what more could you want? I think that kind of goes back to Scott Drew, but Jeremy Sochan is just so disciplined that it's hard for me to think about teams that wouldn't want a defensive presence like his, especially with how active he is on the boards. I mean, he's constantly boxing out. I don't know if I even saw a play where he was at Baylor where he didn't box out. Like, he is just so keyed in on defense. And he's a good open floor passer too. So when they make stops on defense, he's able to, you know, push it in transition. He'll push the running teammates, and he'll be able to make solid passes to help push the pace, which is also really, really good for the NBA. And he's actually a fluid ball handler for his height at 6'9". Like I said before, he uses some misdirection, some sudden movements to generate space. And smaller players probably will not be able to contain him at his length. So if he gets a little bit of a tighter handle on the ball, you know, getting past these smaller guards that are trying to guard him on the perimeter, like, he will just be so good. I really see him as, I mean, like, he should really be projecting his game a lot like Al Horford is right now, where he is kind of a stretch five. And even though Jeremy Sochan isn't as tall or as big as Al Horford is, his defensive style matches Al Horford's a lot. They're both very mobile. They can both move laterally. They both are very disciplined on that end. And Al Horford had to generate his three-point shot too. So I think that Jeremy Sochan's skill set, when he finally kind of develops that three-point efficiency and gets a tighter handle on the ball, I think that he's going to be a really great role player in the NBA. That'll probably take 3 years or so to actually come into fruition. But for him, I think that that's going to be kind of his key and bread and butter in that kind of scenario. Where I see him being drafted, he's looking like, it's weird. There's a lot of, obviously, like, I've gone through millions of mock drafts, and there's some that had him going as high as 9 to the Spurs. There's some that have him going lower in the teens. Personally, I think that he's going to be falling in that 10 to 13 range. I can see the Washington Wizards picking him up. I can see, let me start off by saying this. Any player that gets drafted to the Wizards or to the Knicks, God bless your soul. Literally, God bless your soul. I'm so scared for you. I hope that you can still make it in the NBA, and people will say, like, oh, it was just a situation. It's not that he's a bad player, because that's where, you know, dreams are left to die. So if you're a Baylor fan and you want to see Jeremy Sochan really make it in the NBA, you either want him to get drafted to the Spurs at number 9, and honestly, he won't go before that. I think that 9 is probably the highest you're going to see him drafted. So you either want him to go 9 to the Spurs, have like AJ Griffin and Jalen Duren go 10 and 11, and then maybe get picked up by the Thunder at 12. Like I said before, that's where he's kind of projected on a lot of these mock drafts. And honestly, him getting drafted by the Thunder would really depend on who goes at number one to Orlando. If Orlando picks Jabari Smith, which a lot of people are projecting, then the Thunder will be drafting Chet Holmgren. If the Thunder draft Chet Holmgren at two, I don't foresee them drafting Jeremy Sochan because that's two bigs. And even though they have entirely different skill sets, I still just don't think that they would use two top 15 picks on bigs, especially when they already had Jeremiah Robinson Earl playing a small ball five. They have Derek Favors as a big, so I don't think that would happen. But if the opposite happens and Orlando picks Chet Holmgren and Jabari Smith goes at two, then they will need a more traditional center in the lineup, and that's where Jeremy Sochan will come in. So that's kind of the scenario where he goes to Oklahoma City, and then the Hornets have 13 and 15, and I don't see the Hornets drafting Sochan either. So if he doesn't go 9 to the Spurs and he doesn't go 12 to the Thunder, then I think the Cleveland Cavaliers would pick him up at 14, and I don't see him going lower than that. I think, honestly, like, he would fit in best with the Spurs or with the Thunder if the Thunder draft Jabari Smith. Or if he goes to Cleveland, I think that he could learn a lot from Kevin Love and the way that he played whenever LeBron was on the court. So those aren't terrible spots, and it also would allow him to learn a lot from other veterans. I mean, not in Oklahoma City. I mean, like, if he was on the Spurs or if he was on Cleveland, he'd learn a lot from these veterans, and he'd be a good role piece. And I'm sure he'd be tradable to another good franchise after that. So that's Jeremy Sochan. Moving on to Ochai Agbaji. He's now projected to go to in the mid-teens area. And he's had two workouts so far. Oh, and I also should mention, actually, Jeremy Sochan has had a workout with the Thunder. And I do believe that that is based on where who the Thunder pick at number two. But Jeremy Sochan has had a workout with the Oklahoma City Thunder. So that lets you know that they actually are interested. Back to Ochai Agbaji. He's had workouts with the Charlotte Hornets as well as the Atlanta Hawks. This is important to note because he's also not projected to go before 12, basically in any mock draft. So that leaves him going 13 through, I think, 16. At 13, you have the Hornets. Then you have the Hornets again at 15. And then you have Atlanta at 16. From what I understand, I know that they're trying to... I really think that Ochai being drafted to either the Hornets or the Hawks is a perfect scenario for him. They both have styles of play that really complement his style of play. And just a few stats, he is 6'4 and a half, 22, so he is a little bit older, which, and I know you're saying that that's only, 3 years, but when NBA scouts are looking at these players, when they're younger, they think that they're more moldable. At age 22, it kind of makes these scouts think like this part of their game is pretty much cemented and they aren't as that you can't change them as much as you could a 19-year-old. So looking at Ochai Agbaji at 22, this is basically the core of his game. He's finished with 19.8 points per game, had a 41 three-point percentage, and a very impressive free throw percentage at 76.7. Which is really important to NBA teams at this point because a lot of them really do key in on, if they're shooting guard specifically, what their free throw percentage was because they should be getting to the free throw line a lot and leaning into contact and stuff like that. But Ochai is an interesting prospect because he is very athletic and you can't teach athleticism. Everyone knows that. So any draft prospect that is super athletic like Ochai Agbaji is already one that people have their eye on. A lot like Kendall Brown too, but we'll get to him later. Agbaji brings some smart decision making. Obviously the shooting is there. And he can also create his own shot, although I don't think he's that confident off the bounce, to be honest. And he's really, really strong. He only weighs 217, 215, but he's really strong. He has long arms. He's very versatile on offense and on defense. And he can post up against bigs in college. I don't foresee him really doing that in the NBA, especially since he's only 6'4". He'll probably be more of a shooting style guard. I think that him playing off ball is the best scenario. He's not that much of a shot creator. He can create space for his shot, but I don't think that he can be that dynamic shot creator. But maybe I'm wrong, you know? Ochai Agbaji is very interesting to me because he was kind of inconsistent with his shooting. In the beginning of the Big 12 season this year, he was looking very impressive. He was kind of like the guy to beat. He made 45.6% of his threes over his first 22 games. And then after that, only made 31% in his last eight leading into the conference tournament. So I'm not even talking postseason. Literally the last eight games of the regular season, he only shot 31% from the perimeter. So that's really concerning because for these NBA scouts, they want to make sure that they can kind of project where you're going to go. If you basically are saying, when no one's really guarding me and no one knows about me, I can make 45.6% from three. But whenever people start keying in on me, that's going to go down a lot to 31%, like literally going down 14%. That's huge. So I think that that's concerning and that probably hurt his, just his, you know, possibilities. And honestly, he's not that talented off the dribble. Like he can get to wherever he wants to go. He can create space for his shot. But he's not really shifty. He's not crafty. He only really uses crossovers. I don't see a lot of him going between the leg or behind the back. So I think he's really going to need to work on that for his size in the NBA. I don't see him being any kind of a, you know, creator. I don't see him being a primary creator, not even really a secondary creator. He would be best on a team where he is, like, his job is to shoot, his job is to pass, and his job is to play defense. I don't really think that he needs to necessarily work diligently on his ball handling, although he definitely needs to improve it at least to some degree so that he can, you know, have a nice step back. He can beat players off the dribble on the perimeter and end up driving to the lane more confidently. There were a lot of times when he played at Kansas where he could beat someone off the dribble at like from deep. But then whenever he would try to drive to the rim and a defender would approach him, he'd pull up for a floater or pull up for a jump shot. He wouldn't go all the way to the basket. There's definitely time for that. Like, I'm always here for a good mid-range shot. But NBA-style defenses, you need to make sure that you can still move around these players. So it is slightly concerning that he doesn't have the tightest handle on the ball. But he's a very aware cutter. Like, off-ball scenarios, he's very aware. And he definitely has the explosiveness to get on the right end of lobs. So like I said, him not being a primary creator is ideal because he can get really nice passes off of whoever's kind of leading the charge there. Which is why I think he'd be so good with the Hornets or with the Hawks. Just imagine him next to Trae Young. You know, Trae Young isn't, like, he doesn't really need another shooting force, to be honest. But at the same time, like, those two together, I think, like, having him be able to trust Ochai Agbaji with, you know, getting a few threes and, you know, going to the rim for a transition dunk, I think that's kind of where Ochai Agbaji's sweet spot is. So he's, like, to be honest, I think there's a few scenarios for him. I think either the Hornets are going to want to make sure they snatch him up at 13, although there might be someone they want before Ochai, because since they have the 13th and 15th pick, they're kind of chilling. So I either see Ochai going to the Hornets at 15, or I don't really see the Hornets passing on him though. But if they do pass on him, then Atlanta's going to snatch him up at 16. Moving on to Kendall Brown, who is another just incredible player. Guys, we are gearing up for football to be back, finally. I know this is a basketball podcast, but listen, we all want sports to be back, right? And you want to make sure that you're in the best gear possible to support your teams and feel good, look good. Home Field Apparel has you covered. Just go on to Home Field Apparel. They will have your college with the most comfy, fun, athletic gear possible. Make sure to use code MIDWEST12 to get 15% off at checkout. You reach a point in the draft where someone turns from a prospect into a project. And what I mean by that is a prospect is someone that kind of already has those skills people already know what to expect from them. It's just kind of tweaking some things and polishing other parts of their game. A project is someone where there is either a gap in their game or there's a few spots where, you know, they need significant improvement, but there's other parts of their game that are just already so solidified and so fun to watch and a kind of a plug-and-play type scenario. And for Kendall Brown, he already brings the athleticism to the table. I mean, he's just so explosive. Even in traffic, he's explosive. Like, he does not mind jumping into anyone and has awesome body control. He uses his angles to generate his space, has a great sense of how to get open. He just knows his body very, very well, and that's very difficult for a 19-year-old. Like, I don't know very many 19-year-olds in general that know their body well, let alone 19-year-olds that are in this draft that know their body as well as Kendall Brown does. Like, he just knows his exact angles whenever he's driving, whenever he's pulling up for a floater, whenever he is, you know, trying to explode through traffic and find his little gaps of space. He just knows exactly where to put his body, which is really hard to coach too, which is why he's a bit of a project, but that's something that he holds so well. And he's 6'8", which also helps because he's got a little bit more length, but he's still very mobile for his length, which is good. He averaged 10 points per game and shot 38.9% from three this past season with the Bears. And he looks like he's a projectable shooter. And what I mean by that is that he has a soft touch near the basket on floaters and pull-ups. They want to see these numbers kind of come up from him. He wasn't asked to kind of always take the reins over at Baylor, but he was so athletic that the ball would just find him. And he has really good passing instincts too. Like, he can sense when his other players are open, and also his timing on his passes is so, so key. Whenever I talked about that shooting percentage earlier, I know that 38.9% is very impressive, although it's on a very low volume. And that's why I say that he has projectable shooting, because of course you're going to have a higher percentage on low volume. At least I would hope that you do. But he's going to be asked to be shooting a lot more once he goes into the NBA, especially for a player at his length and with his skill set. So that's why he's looking like he's a projectable shooter, because his shot mechanics are there. He just didn't shoot a lot at Baylor. So since they have that low volume to go off of and the percentages are high, they believe that he will project. He's projectedly to be a really smart shooter in the NBA. Defensively, he's very versatile, aggressive. He can lock down guards. And he just, whenever he's guarding players on the perimeter, he really just envelops them with his length. I would get intimidated walking up with a guy like with Kendall Brown's wingspan and as agile as he is. I'd be like, how the heck am I going to be able to get a shot off on this guy? I don't know if that's happening. And he also is good at fighting through picks and pressuring opponents, like I said before. And a lot also like Ochai Agbaji, he should not be the primary creator on any team. I don't think that he has the ball handling skills to even be the primary creator, maybe not even a secondary creator. But like, him and Ochai Agbaji have a very similar profile, except obviously Kendall Brown is a little bit taller. But he's really, really suited to feast off of secondary matchups, kind of be stuck with a player's, like with a team's, you know, like fourth best defender. I think that he'll play very well off of that. And considering his movement off ball and just his overall feel for the game, you're going to see him just find these small little spaces and these gaps where it doesn't look like he could thread a pass there, or it doesn't look like he can get a shot off there, but he will and he'll make them. Where I want to see him go, I really want to see Kendall Brown go 24, or be picked at number 24 to the Milwaukee Bucks. Like, could you imagine? Because, you know, they already have Giannis, who is just this freak of an athlete, and like at his length, doing all the things that he does. The only thing that Giannis is really lacking right now is a consistent three-point shot. And once he gets that down, like, you're not going to be able to stop him. But in the meantime, they don't need a big-time star on their team. They already got him. They got Chris Middleton. And so they're really just looking at a good project and a good role player to come along with them in this draft. At number 24, Kendall Brown's going to be your guy. I mean, he's athletic. He fits that profile really well. He can run in transition. And he's not going to try to do too much. He's never going to try to do too much with a team unless he gets drafted to, like, the Washington Wizards or like Houston, who just literally needs some, like, or Detroit, someone that actually needs someone to do the most. But if Kendall Brown gets drafted to a mid to upper tier NBA team like Milwaukee, they're not going to ask him to do too much. He's going to have so much room to improve and grow with the veterans that are on that team. But he's also bringing in that youth, that athleticism, that defensive versatility that is also very much ingrained to the culture in Milwaukee right now. I think that he'd be such an amazing fit. They would get a great player at 24 with Kendall Brown. So that's my dream scenario for him. Lastly, we're going to get into Christian Brown, who is a very controversial player based just on his personality. He's someone that I really enjoyed watching last season for Kansas. But this dude's going to go wild in the NBA. I am telling you right now, out of all the four players I'm talking about today, when I'm thinking about their overall NBA careers, I think that Christian Brown is going to ball out the most, to be honest. And I think that just comes from his intrinsic competitive tenacity. Like, he wants to be the best wherever he goes. He wants to prove himself wherever he goes. He has a chip on his shoulder constantly. And the second he starts proving people wrong and he's just sinking those threes, or he's going up for that transition dunk, or he even got a few blocks I saw last season for Kansas where he would just get up in someone's face and I'm like, bro, he has the mouth for the NBA. He has the mouth and he has the athleticism. He is usually called sneaky athletic, but at this combine, literally his top goal was proving to people that he's not, quote, sneaky athletic. He's just athletic. And he did that by getting the third best vertical in the NBA. He actually beat out his teammate, Ochai Agbaji, with his vertical. So he really was out on a mission. And I think that he accomplished that at the combine. I think his draft stock did go up a few pegs after the combine, just based on what everybody saw. And I can't speak enough good things about this player. He's one of the perfect 3-and-D players in this draft. There's a few other ones, but Christian Brown specifically has just such a good feel for the game. And I know that comes from both of his parents, how, you know, his dad played in the NBA, his mom played in college. So he comes from a basketball family, and it shows because he knows exactly where to be. He knows when to push the pace. He knows when to take it back. He knows when to shoot the transition three. He knows when to drive to the lane. And he knows how to act off ball. And defensively, too, he's such a nuisance. Oh, my gosh. I love a good defender. Like, I love Jeremy Sohan. Jeremy Sohan, for me, is just such a joy to watch. Christian Brown is a joy to watch because he's just a nuisance. Like, he will annoy the shit out of you into never getting the ball. He's always in deny. And even if his player does get the ball, he is so tough to beat one-on-one. His defensive stance is always there. He's always locked in. And he rotates really well, too. He also baits players into making bad decisions, which is such an incredible trait and one that you can basically not find in draft prospects, honestly. So for him to have such a strong defensive profile, he's going to annoy a lot of people. And he's 6'7". He honestly has, like, a little bit of an advantage because Ochai Agbaji's only 6'4", so Ochai's going to have to really focus on his shooting efficiency to make sure that he keeps up with his role. But someone that has a few inches on him, like Christian Brown, he will be that perfect NBA size. And he proved his explosiveness at the combine. And he's just really, really quick. And not to mention, I said 3-and-D, so I already mentioned his defense, but his 3-point per shooting is definitely there. He shot 38% on catch and shoot threes. And 38% overall. Name another player around the mid-30s that has a better shooting percentage. You literally cannot. You can't find a player in the mid-30s or the upper 20s that has a higher shooting percentage than Christian Brown. Like, he is going to be such a steal for someone in that range. The only problem, quote-unquote, with Christian Brown is that, like, he does have a slower release on his shot, which is a little bit troubling because that means that he kind of is falling into a spot where his shot can get blocked, especially with players that are taller in the NBA. Like, you didn't see that a lot in college because Christian Brown was a good height for college ball. But in the NBA, if he has that slow release, taller players are going to be able to swap that out. So that's something he needs to be careful of. And also needs to improve his floater. He only shot 35.7% on his floaters while at Kansas, this past season at least. Not like the NBA focuses on mid-range shots. It's not a, quote, high percentage shot. So it's not at the top of the list, but at the same time, a player like Christian Brown really has the ability to score at all three levels, at the rim, at mid-range, and at the perimeter. And so really where he needs to improve is from the mid-range, and that includes a floater. So that's kind of his two improvements he needs to make so far. And he's 21, so a little bit younger than Ochai, which is good. Not as young as Jeremy Sochan, not as young as Kendall Brown, not as young as a lot of these other draft prospects, but still, 21 is a prime age. I saw that he worked out with the Pacers, which I honestly don't love. I don't think that he is going to turn a lot of heads over in Indiana. Now, here's my dream for Christian Brown. My dream for Christian Brown is that he goes 29 to the Grizzlies. I just want to sink that in for a second because, like, could you imagine a player like Christian Brown joining the Grizzlies? Dude would go crazy, crazy. Just think about Ja Morant, because Ja Morant is one of the best ISO scorers, one of the best shot creators. And even though he's so small, he's so crafty that he can get to the rim. He's shooting threes. He does whatever he wants, right? Memphis does not need a playmaker. They need someone that will run out in transition. They need someone who's aggressive defensively, someone that's young, ready, and has a great shooting percentage from three. And that's exactly who Christian Brown is. Like, he would fit into that culture so well. That is my dream. Like, I can't imagine a better fit for Christian Brown than the Grizzlies. I also wouldn't be mad if he was drafted to Golden State at 28. I honestly don't think that they're going to be looking for another shooting guard. They already have Steph Curry. They already have Klay Thompson. They have Jordan Poole. They have so many players stepping up right now. Like, they're just so deep that I think that they might be kind of trying to mold another center style player, which is why I foresee them drafting Christian Coloco. So I don't see them shooting another or picking another shooting guard, which is why I don't think that Christian Brown will be drafted to Golden State, although he'd actually play really well there too. And can you imagine the shit talk that would go on between Draymond and Christian Brown? Those two would make for one of the most annoying duos in the NBA, which would be fun for me to watch. And a lot of other people would hate. But I think that his energy and his style is just perfect for Memphis right now. And if Memphis doesn't have their eyes on Christian Brown, then they are doing something wrong. I know they have their eyes on Marjon Beauchamp, is also another good player, but I think that Christian Brown is just a little bit more exciting. But that's probably my Big 12 bias. I'm not mad about it. But I really think that Christian Brown is going to play really well in the NBA if he gets drafted to the right scenario. But that'll do it for today. I'm putting out a mock draft, and in my mock draft, it kind of shows where I think each best scenario is for every single player in the upcoming draft going in the first round. It won't be based on what I think will actually happen. I really wanted to focus this on team fits instead of kind of all the stats that everyone is focusing on and all the old film from high school of Shaedon Sharpe, boo, that I don't think is definitely necessary. So I'm going to be putting out a mock draft soon where I'll kind of go into where I think each player will best look. I kind of already went into that here, but if you're interested in that, it'll be on thefranchiseok.com, so you can go ahead and check that out. But that's it for today. We'll see where these four players land, and I'm sure I'll have more things to say about that later. But for now, this has been Midwest Madness. If you like this podcast and you want us to keep putting out some fun episodes for you guys, some different things for you guys, be sure to leave us a like, leave us a review, and follow us on Twitter at MW_MadnessBig12. I'm sure you'll find it. And I'm at CB on Sports on Twitter. Christine Butterfield, of course, signing off. We'll see you guys next time.
Social Podcast Network.